The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Kia ora tato. My name is Toby Manhire. We are taking a little break on Gone By Lunchtime over the summer. We have sand between our toes as we speak. We are re-upping some of our favourite episodes from the year. This one was recorded in the blur of the morning after the extraordinary result in the election in October. Chloe Swarbrick came in and chatted to us, and we had a very special guest on the phone to chat with her. It was mayhem, but it was kind of beautiful as well, and hope you enjoy it, listening back to it. Thanks to Flick, thanks to Spinoff members, thanks to you for keeping us going.
What we need is someone to mention us a lot,
yeah,
in association with a policy that lots of New Zealanders would quite
really
like.
Really support, yeah, totally.
Gone By Lunchtime.
No mai, haere mai. My name's Toby Manhire.
Wow, that was weird.
That was
Who
so
said that?
That was freaky.
That's not true. That's Chloe Swarbrick. Oh, I'm God. Toby Manhire.
It's an insurgent campaign.
That's Annabelle Lee Mather.
I'm Ben Thomas. No,
look, it's been a really long night and we're all confused, and Chloe Swarbrick is here. The election was held last night. I guess that's a thing that is worth mentioning. And among other achievements, Chloe Swarbrick won Auckland Central. Is it definitely in the bag? Is there any chance it could shift on specials? 400
I mean, there's always chances that things can shift and change. And, you know, don't count your chickens, etc. But what we do know, talking to our scrutineers and Leroy, campaign manager, sat in the corner over there, was getting calls from some of those scrutineers who were saying that at some of the booths, like Alan Melville, they ran out of special vote forms because so many young people in particular from the university halls were coming to enroll and vote at the same time.
So you're saying Helen White might win in the quick?
Well, I'm saying that the Electoral Commission had one job, and they under-anticipated just how many people might want to express their democratic rights.
What was it like watching it come in? I mean, it sort of seemed to open up a bit for you relatively early and then sort of stay there. Is that what happened?
So we were just manically refreshing. There's so many photos of Leroy and myself looking at our phones. And
typical,
I think when we were
millennials.
I know. Got bloody
Wait, are
hell.
You a millennial?
I am a millennial. I'm at the tail end of the millennials. I'm not quite Gen Z, so I'm like too old for the Gen Zs but also too young for the millennials. Not quite a Drake lyric, but... when 1% of the votes came in, I was immediately like, Leroy, look, we're ahead.
Yeah.
And by that point, we were like 100 votes ahead. There was one point, I think, when it was between 11 and 15% or so, where Helen jumped ahead by about 100 votes.
Oh.
And after that, it then reversed.
And did you think somewhere in your, oh, well, that was
no, I think that in order to do what I do, which is to have gone from running and kind of out the gate, left of field independent campaign in 2016, and then, you know, joining the Greens and going through a very traumatic experience and, you know, losing Materia in 2017 to now. And jeepers, you can't take anything for granted as the Greens, but you do have to hold an unparalleled level of optimism.
And now that you hold an electorate seat, or you are an electorate MP elect, is that a thing we say? Does that mean that you can now boss James and Marama around?
No.
Just sort of these kind of these lightweight list MPs.
Oh my god, have you? I'm not
barely
sure
real
seen
MPs.
Not even really. Oh,
oh, you're, oh, is that you, Nick Smith?
I mean, who voted for them?
Yeah.
Only 160,000 people across the country. But the funny thing about like the formation of all of the different caucus rooms for all the parties is you look at the Nats, you look at Labour, and they've got these like audiences of the MPs facing the leaders. The Greens, far more of an ecosystem, finely balanced, if you
don't
will.
Even have
we
chairs.
Were around a
don't
table.
Even have chairs, just
yeah, we sit and we hold hands just and sing Kumbaya.
Drum circle.
Yeah, I knew it.
Yeah, who's bringing the Scooby for the kombucha et al?
What does it mean for you, though? Because you had, I mean, one of the most interesting things about your term is that you worked extremely hard, did a lot of things, but also quite honest.
It's quite phenomenal for somebody to work hard in Parliament.
No, I got to the end of the sentence. but no, you were quite candid about the things about it that you thought were
lame.
Broken and hopeless
and
how those structures couldn't work. So I guess being an MP now, almost old style, having a geographical constituency.
I love it.
Is that going to change the way you approach it, do you think?
So one of the many reasons that we ran the campaign that we did to try and win Auckland Central is, I mean, it's been obviously awesome being a list MP for the Greens, but that means that you're all around the country and these pockets of people everywhere who, you know, you are accountable to. And that doesn't change. But what does change now is that I have an anchor. I'm directly accountable to my community. And I think that that's what grassroots politics is. You know, I was having a yarn actually in this room when we were talking about how things have changed over the past 40-odd years in politics. And I think, you know, MMP has enabled us to have a far more diverse parliament. But having the opportunity to represent a community and to build a grassroots campaign and to continue scaling that up is something that Marilyn Waring really encouraged me to do. So, yeah, that chat with her was actually, interestingly, when we did that for the
it was
spin-off
a good
not
chat.
Too long ago. Was
available on the spinoff.co.nz. You can watch that video. It's really interesting to hear you guys speak together. Another person who might have some advice for you, if we can get hold of her.
Are we getting Sandra on the line?
We're going to call Mum.
Great.
We're going to do it.
I love it.
We're
going to check in with Mumsy.
It's going to be quite lo-fi. We're just going to do it with a speaker. I probably should have told you we're going to do this, Jane. Jane, thanks so much for coming in on a Sunday to record this. That's our magnificent
Mama.
Chief Executive in charge of
podcast. Hi, Mama. Jane. Okay, you're live on air. It's a very relaxed situation with Toby Manhire and Ben Thomas.
Kia ora, Sandra.
Hi, Sandra.
And Chloe Schwalbrick. I'm putting you on speaker, okay? Okay. There you go, Mama.
Kia ora, Sandra.
Congratulations, dear.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for being a beacon of the fact that we can do and change things.
I always thought you could.
Oh, thank you. Honestly, this is too good.
I think people underestimated you.
Oh, totally.
I think people underestimated the fluidity of Auckland Central.
I've always said it was the it was your win in 93 and even Nikki taking out in 2008 that
exactly.
made me really confident that, you know, people cared about boots on the ground, independent thinking and hard work, and those are the only variables we had control over, so we gave it everything.
Yes, and also, although Auckland Central has changed, there's always been a strong environmental conservation vote. People forget the Gulf Islands are out there, the home of Greenpeace and Forest and Bird on Waiheke and Barrier. You know, the young professionals, even in my day, even though they had a conservative bent, they were concerned about the environment and, of course, a massive student population.
Totally. And it's kind of the face of inequality, actually. I was talking to Peter Williams on Talkback before I came to this liberal lefty institution, the spin-off. And I was told by Peter, you know, it's insane that the people in these leafy suburbs who have million-dollar houses have elected this radical greenie. And I was making the point that actually, if you look at the demographic data, about it, Auckland Central also happens to have one of the most kind of insecure tenancies for people. You have the highest amount of people who are moving year on year to different rental properties. You have amongst the lowest per annum income. You also have one of the youngest populations in the country and one of the most diverse. But yeah, we actually went across the Aotea Great Barrier, and two very keen, awesome volunteers at the core of our campaign, Nico and Emma, decided that they would door knock on Great Barrier. So yeah, so they met some chickens and some people who had no idea that the election was happening. But I'm sure we turned out a few of those votes on Aotea.
I door knocked in 1983, Waiheke, and some hoot of a reporter at the paper I went worked out that two local government elections would have passed by before I finished knocking on the last door. But it's important and it works.
Yeah, yeah. The ground campaign always does, and I think that's the coolest thing about this campaign.
Mama, do you have any advice for Chloe?
Do I have any advice for Chloe? Well, first of all, Chloe, in all sincerity, my heart warms when I see globally young women politicians emerging who are prepared in these urgent times to call it like it is. And from the time you had the audacity to stand for the military in Auckland, I can't help but liken you to Congresswoman Alessandria Ortega-Cortez. You put me in mind of her, and I hope there's many more to come. What I would say, I don't need to tell you to be fearless, but what I would say is it is in the Green Party's interest for you to be assertive in terms of what roles you are given. This is not the time for a person like you to say, you know, I'm happy to sit back. You know, others can be ministers who have more experience than me and so on. You actually have to fight for a ministerial portfolio within your party, in my view, and it is important for the longevity of your party that your face is seen and your ability operating at that level. So that would be my first piece of advice to you. And my second piece of advice to you would be that the strong calls, and clearly at this election the expectation for transformative decisions for our country, have largely been handicapped by two things: COVID-19, of course, and the state of our economy, and indeed Labor's pledge to not introduce a capital gains tax. But there are a million of regressive taxes in this country that are disbenefiting the poorest, the most vulnerable and the weak, and there is absolutely nothing for the Green Party to not fearlessly fight for the removal of those regressive taxes in this day and age. It saddens me that that's off the agenda in terms of the Labor Party, because if not now, then when? There's never ever been a better time for the New Zealand taxation system to change so that the poorest don't pay the same amount of tax on every loaf of bread they eat as the rich, and the packet noodles and so on. So transaction tax, capital gains tax, progressive taxes need to be put back on the table. And even if the Green Party can't win, they still have to educate and make the call for all of us in New Zealand.
Kia ora. Thank you, Sandra.
Kia ora, Mama.
Thank you, Sandra.
You're welcome.
Everybody says thank you.
We love you.
Lovely to have you on the podcast.
Love you all too. Yay for the left.
Yeah. Ka pai.
Bye, Mama.
You need to go, Chloe, surely.
Do I?
Apparently.
Okay.
Can we just
okay.
Just one question about the Hallowed Ground game, which you've mentioned a couple of times in terms of winning. I saw on your Instagram, on your Facebook, all over social media, you were having street corner meetings all over Ponsonby, just up the road from sunny St. Mary's Bay where I live. Was that difficult? Because Ponsonby Road gets very little foot traffic. So were you just sort of standing there by yourself a lot of
Hamish
the time?
Price. We've got photographic evidence of how many people turned out to those street corner meetings. They were awesome. They were awesome. We had a lot of great conversations, and you could totally, some of them about obviously the wealth tax, others about, there was one person who was really fascinated by our clean energy policy. So I had to, after that, go home and really upskill myself on how solar panels actually work. There was other people who were really interested in education. Yeah, it was honestly just really, really cool. It's the kind of politics that I've always wanted to do. You know how earnest I am.
So, Chloe, He wasn't really interested in your street corner meetings. He just wanted to do a...
To make a point about
To do a gag.
But don't dunch.
Okay, you can go now. Next meeting.
Now that you are senior to James and Marama, and
Toby
and emboldened by Sandra Lee, what's more, are you going to form a coalition with Labor? Is that just out of the question now, and it's sort of probably going to be a confidence and supply, that's what's going to be on the table?
I think at this point it's still too early to tell. We have all of our MPs, including our three brand new shiny MPs, coming to Parliament this week. We'll have our caucuses on Tuesday. I'm sure that the media will be expecting different things from every single iteration of those across the parliamentary spectrum. It'll be interesting for Davo Seymour to have
the
caucus.
They're going to buddy you guys all off, I think.
Well, he, interestingly enough, I ran into him once at the airport and I was like, oh, mate, how come you're not at, because it was Tuesday and, you know, heading to Parliament, and I had an interview or a meeting or something in Auckland. And, you know, David was on his way to the airport at the same time, on his way to the plane to Wellington. And I was like, why aren't you? Oh, you don't have to be there for caucus. It's just yourself. So, yeah, I think that that'll be interesting to watch. But, yeah, in terms of negotiations and kind of what comes next, I think everybody is really aware that there is a very staunch mandate now for progressive change. Interesting not to necessarily hear those same words of transformation from the Labor Party, but that's why the Greens exist. You know, regardless of whether we are at the heart of that government or not, we will be holding them to account and pushing for better change.
I've got one more question and I'll let you escape, which is the cannabis referendum. You've been on the doorstep about talking to people, your scrutiny is watching. And of course, you've spent a lot of time not just running for Auckland Central, but becoming almost a kind of spokesperson for the yes vote.
Didn't mean to be.
Well, it sort of turned out that way, didn't it?
New Zealand's too small.
Yeah. And those referendums have been sort of strange things in a strange year, I think. What's your hunch? I mean, the polls are a bit mixed. It seems like the polls that have suggested it could go through are ones that have been undertaken principally online. Not that they're not okay, but they are online. What do you think? Do you think it's going to happen? Not should it happen, but will it happen?
It was always going to come down to turnout, and that's what the polls showed us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with the doubling of the international vote, with at least what we've seen on the ground here in Auckland, with more young people going to the polls.
82.5 is the Electoral Commission call at the moment,
82.5% turnout.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I think that's pretty damn close then. I think that we're in a good position. But, you know, I'm not going to waste this opportunity to say I'm so gutted with the New Zealand Medical Association and their chair, Dr. Kate Baddock, who decided to, based on a 2012 press release, stipulate that the position of the NZMA was in opposition, which then ran rampant in the ironically and awfully named Say Nope to Dope campaign kind of pamphlets and flyers.
It's a catchy phrase.
Well, the funniest thing about it is Rhymes. No one's saying Rhymes. Nope to the dope. The dope continues to exist. It's where you want it to exist and who controls it. But, you know, that kind of misinformed stance didn't get retracted until 1.1 million votes were cast. Mm. And at that point, Kate Baddock, the chair, Dr. Kate Baddock, sent an email to members of NZMA, not even to the public. Mm. It then ended up being leaked by those doctors, who obviously were rightly furious. But I just feel really gutted by how the yes side of the campaign has obviously had to push from a very evidential, very scientific basis. We've been constantly scrutinised and fact-checked and, you know, to the T. Whereas the no campaign has been able to run just this bizarre fear, obfuscation and doubt campaign. And I would have hoped that there was a slightly higher kind of burden on them to try and explain why the status quo was good.
Mm. Chloe Money, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts just in terms of the cannabis referendum. I think one of the reasons it's garnered such a strong response from Māori is because of the, you know, the prosecution of young Māori users. I do wonder, with the age being 20, are we still going to see, is some of that going to be watered down once the rubber hits the road, because 16 to 20-year-olds or however, you know, younger people aren't going to be covered by it and therefore may still end up being unfairly prosecuted?
So based on the draft legislation, it's 160 pages. If anyone wants to read it, go to referendums.govt.nz for impartial
information. It's finished.
But they,
it's finished.
What that outlines is civil penalties primarily. So those younger people will not end up being caught up in the criminal justice system in the way that they currently are. The other thing to state is just how important it is that you know, we recognise the massive opportunity this presents to change the criminal justice system in this one tiny, teeny way, which has ripple effects. But, you know, this is never, ever going to be a panacea to complete transformation of the criminal justice system, so-called criminal justice system, to, you know, being founded on Te Tiriti o Waitangi, let alone being anti-racist. But for us, it was really important. And for me in particular, you know, I fought really explicitly and publicly for there to be complete expungement of all people who had former convictions for cannabis crimes, as they were, if there was that positive yes majority vote. Unfortunately, didn't get that across the line with Labor and New Zealand First. So one thing that we did manage to win by virtue of pushing on that front was explicit recognition that those who do have former cannabis convictions are not by default barred from engaging in the new legal system. Because the thing that I was really worried about is us ending up with a system similar to what you see in quite a few states in the US, whereby people who were prosecuted under prohibition are entirely different to those who benefit and profit from a new legal market.
Mm. Kia ora.
It's weird as well that they're not reporting the results. I think that's ridiculous. I think if you were a really big investor, you could commission a poll completely within the law to find out how people voted and then make your decision accordingly.
Don't worry, it'll be like
it's
a second
right,
Christmas. It'll be like a second Christmas.
So like,
we'll get another surprise.
You'll have another party.
We'll have another party.
But because the people have voted, now it's closed, and they're all just sitting there in boxes, I could commission a poll. If I was a investor and I had some money and I wanted to make a decision about whether or not to invest in Hikurangi or whatever, I could commission a really good poll, find out basically what the result was, because just ask people how they voted, and then make an investment decision.
Wow. Do you also offer stock market advice to me on the Got My Lunchtime podcast?
We only do Bitcoin. We only do the dark web and Bitcoin.
Well, no, after this election, we're setting up a subsidiary company to do internal polling for the New Conservatives top and Advanced New Zealand.
Sustainable New Zealand is actually... Didn't have 87 votes, man.
As soon as you pay your...
Oh, in Auckland Central.
That's what it looked like last time.
Mate.
If you pay your first deposit, you immediately get 5%. And then, then there's an instalment plan to get up to 15%.
There were two polls that had me in third place for Auckland Central, so I feel like anyone can just write down any numbers. Everyone's got hot takes and Twitter reckons.
What do you think happened there? Do you think that those were relatively accurate and then your campaign surged? Or
I genuinely don't know. All I know is that you know, it was actually not all too dissimilar, because it's kind of the only reference point that I have to 2016, where in the final 2 weeks or so, there was that poll commission, which was published by you guys at the spin-off, where I was in fifth place. And that then enabled me, it opened the door to more kind of media and stuff, because I was previously banging on the door mainstream kind of commentary, being like, where's my spot? Let me debate people. So I don't know, mate. But I know that the only stuff that we did have control over was the kind of campaign that we ran. So we ran it as hard and as fast as we could.
Yeah, well, you did an amazing job.
Oh, thanks, Ben Thomas, right-wing commentator.
Congratulations.
Formerly Excelsior.
Congratulations, Chloe Swarbrick. Thank you for coming on our podcast.
Thank you, Chloe Money.
Thanks for the bubbles.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, just to be clear, the bubbles, I promised them bubbles to celebrate the end of the election. I don't. That sounds mean. It's not to celebrate your victory, Chloe, but I sort of thought the listeners might get upset.
I think that it's been a really long election, and most people are probably quite sick of politics.
Yes. Yeah, we are, and that's what we're here for. It's like, we've still got to try and keep them listening for another 10, 15 minutes.
I know, and it's my only hobby.
Oh, right.
Like, now I'm just bereft. Like, now there's nothing in life I love anymore.
I was, yesterday, trying to pass the time, and it was just, because you're in this kind of purgatory, can't campaign, which is actually kind of nice, but, you know, I was scrolling through Twitter, and absolutely nothing going on, went on my Facebook, you know, just not much. Same with Instagram. I'm like, what do normal people do? And then I was like, can't go and talk to people about politics. I turned up, I went to the cafe, and a guy very jokingly was like, oh, you're round about. Oh, you're influencing my vote. And I was like, oh, goddamn, I've got to. So I was like, I don't want to be reported. I don't want to deal with this.
So I put a big coat over my head.
Yeah, so Leroy and I went and delivered sandwiches, and I made him go in to deliver the actual sandwiches to people, and then I went home and sat in the apartment and tried to watch a K-pop documentary. So yeah, that's how I do an election day. I don't know
maybe
what normal
we should
people
institute
do
that more regularly. Like, have 6 o'clock closing for politics discussions and just ban it like on election day after six every day. Oh, that's
everything
that's
is political. I'm like, do we want to talk about the funding of this K-pop doco and how we could potentially be providing some funding to, I don't know, New Zealand On Air to showcase? I don't know where I'm going with that, but I am the broadcasting spokesperson.
You're the you're probably the broadcasting minister if you want.
See you later, Toby. All right, ka pai team.
So we clap Chloe Money, leave it. Get a girl.
So, Ben Thomas, Annabelle Mather, it was the election night last night. We've discussed the Chloe Swarbrick thing. Otherwise, what were the moments that stuck out to you while you were watching it, the ones that we can talk about? The Labour Party, I think it was, that came first. What were the? Where were you watching it, Annabelle?
I was watching it at TV3. Standout moments for me were, well, not that I could watch it, but as Ben mentioned in our last podcast, seeing Shannon Halbert flip Northcote.
Mm.
Bittersweet because his father passed away yesterday morning. Nō reira, mō kōrea nō kia reringa mihi aroha ki a koe Shannon me tō whānau. For me, I think the refresh button on my computer's broken because I just sat on Wairiki all night going, refresh.
Yeah,
but there was also some other amazing races, like Soraya Peke-Mason, Adrian Dudafe's sister, who once stood against Hariana Tūria in Te Tai Hauaru, she very nearly took Rangi Tike. She was ahead most of the night. Seeing Shane Riti, who really was behind for most of the night. There was a couple of really fascinating races, seeing, so you know, like Rangitata in that, you know, turn red, seeing Nick Smith go, fascinating. And as my mum said to me last night, you know, the thing about Nick Smith going is that there's, and with Nikki gone, there's no more green blues in National, so no more. I guess you
Nick
could
Smith
say they've lost their environment.
The list, maybe, I think, but
yes, Smith will be back on the list.
Will they?
But there are already been iterations.
Well, you just ruined my whole shtick then, didn't you? No, you killed it.
No,
you killed it for me.
No,
killed it.
No,
Spoilers.
Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. No. The suggestion is that Nick Smith and Jerry Brownlee will have conversations with their colleagues and the grandees and realise that it's time.
Okay, well, let me talk.
And solicit MPs, you know, because it doesn't trigger a by-election, to just make way.
Okay, well, let me talk about some other people that might be gone then, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Since you killed that one for me.
Okay, sorry.
Dan Bidwell?
He's gone.
He's gone, Burger. And I don't think he'll get back on the list. Harete Hipango. Will she make it back on the list?
Steph Lewis.
She's very close.
She'd be close.
She's either there or thereabouts.
Alfred Nuttall?
No, he's gone.
Agnes Lohini.
She's on the cusp. If there were a couple of retirements from Smith, say Brownlee, she might get it back in.
Joe Hayes.
She's in that same block. So there's a block which you could cynically call the diversity block, sort of which is just about where they cut off in terms of the list seats that they'll bring in this term, and that includes all of those MPs. And so there's a question. I mean, certainly in terms of caucus diversity, that would be a boon to get some of those guys in. None of them have been super high performing MPs.
But it wipes out the diversity in the party, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a whitewash, not a bloodbath.
National really have got a recruitment problem. You know, somebody like Tania Tapsell, who would have been a fantastic addition to the party, unfortunately, just, you know, with the red wave, didn't have a chance in the end, as it turned out, of taking East Coast, and nowhere near on the list. And, you know, the gamble that Judith Collins made was putting these people in, you know, what had previously been national seats, throwing down the gauntlet, saying, if you want to be an MP, you win this seat. Well, as it turned out, I think National were wiped out in the electorates in a way that nobody really expected.
And then the other thing is the gender balance.
Yeah.
The gender balance, I think I saw somewhere, is 53% male across the parliament, 47%.
But I mean in the National Party.
Female, yeah.
Labour is 50% for the first time ever.
Mm.
Claire Szabo, who was speaking to media at the town hall last night, I went along to Labour's thing, was really pushing that and talking about the number of Pacifica MPs that were incoming.
The Greens are about, what, 70%?
I think Marama said this morning they've increased their Māori MPs by 200%.
Right.
That's quite good.
So of ACT?
Yes, and I was thinking to myself this morning was, you know, Nicola McKee, who's the spokesperson for, is it the New Zealand Rifle?
The Guns.
The Guns Club, the right. It's a very Ngāpuhi policy platform, I feel. Quite traditional Ngāpuhi for David Seymour. Kia ora.
So for National, and let's just remind those of you who weren't burning the midnight oil last night, it finished with Labour on 49.1%. National on 26.8%, the worst result since 2002, which would give them, and this is, you know, we've still got specials to come as well, that would give them the National Party 35 and it would give Labour 64. Chances are it'll probably be one more, maybe two more for Labour on the specials. Hard to know. Where does that leave National though, Ben? I mean, it's, you know, famously, infamously, Judith Collins has said that if you're polling under 35, then you can't really be the leader of the National Party. But the circumstances have changed since she said that.
And she would say, and she would say, why do you always want to be bringing up the past?
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking forward. And she, this morning, sort of set out her stall as the next 3 years is the campaign, da-da-da-da-da-da, very... casting forward, as you suggest, Anna, but apart from anything else, it's hard to know who would want to take the job now.
Well, they're running out of bodies, right? In 2002, their solution to that sort of disaster was their new MPs were John Key, Don Brash, Judith Collins, you know, and... Here, you know, you don't see anyone of that kind of caliber coming in. Some people might say Christopher Luxon, but again, totally untested, hasn't really impressed in the sort of media that he's done, you know, since becoming a very high-profile candidate who seems to have a pretty high opinion of himself.
And the Todd Muller experiment.
And the Todd Muller experiment.
Comes as a pretty stark warning of convincing yourself that somebody is the answer.
That's right. It might be a little while before they just look at the business CV and throw somebody into the opposition leadership. But then again, you know, who else have they got who is a recognisable public figure who's tried and proven? Mark Mitchell, he's pretty good.
Simon Bridges. MP.
Simon Bridges, well, he came out this morning and said he doesn't want it. Now, presumably Bridges, if he does have any interest in it, is waiting to be begged to take it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And remember, you know, the revitalization of Simon Bridges, the yaks, etc., that's a very online phenomenon. You know, he is much more comfortable in his own skin, but that has a very negligible effect on, you know, what were very negative ratings for him as the as opposition leader when he was there. And his margin in Tauranga got cut to a razor. You know, I think it was less than about 2,000. It was around 2,000. He lost about 75% of his majority in Tauranga. So there's nothing about Bridges that suggests he's in any way immune from this re-wave.
Yep.
I do wonder if part of the, you know, diminishing national support is a vote of no confidence in the fundamental Christian flavour that's infiltrated the party, because I think a lot of kind of traditional national supporters probably quite like the idea of things like euthanasia and worry about what would happen if it was to go any more towards the Christian side of the spectrum.
I think that will be a concern for their new, as you've pointed out, quite undiverse caucus. I don't think that was really a factor in this result. This was a referendum on not Labour, but the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, maybe to a lesser extent, slightly Grant Robertson and their handling of COVID. Because if it was just about the National Party's instability, which obviously didn't help, right? It is, you know, but if it was just about that, what you would have seen is the centre-right vote remains around the same size, New Zealand First get a boost, ACT get a boost, maybe the Cons get a boost. Instead, what we saw is huge amounts of voters shifting over from the centre-right to the centre-left. You know, the Greens you would normally expect would go down when Labour went up. In this case, both of them rose in the polls. You know, it's really an extraordinary shift.
And the stuff on the National side played so neatly into the strategy that Labour was running, wasn't it? We've buried the lead here a bit because we, you know, this is the biggest ever result under MMP. And yes, COVID, yes, National in shambles, yes, Ardern's leadership through the term, yes, it's a first term government, and we tend to return first term governments, or have done since Bill Rowling. But it's still a hell of an achievement, right? Like, it's still to get pretty much one in two votes.
It is. It's an incredible achievement. And that's why I think the result in Wairiki is so interesting, that while the rest of New Zealand is turning red in droves, even those, like, Tūturu blue electorates, and as it turns out, Jacinda may hate the farmers, but the farmers actually quite like Jacinda. That's why the Wairiki seat, flipping back to the Māori Party, just 3 years after Māori gave them the boot, is so fascinating, I think.
And what does it mean for them?
And also reinforces the fact that Māori absolutely do vote strategically.
Yeah, well, I mean, the absolutely, and you can see that, and that clearly people had listened to the suggestion of voting low on list for Māori Party and voting high in electorate.
And also interesting, I don't think, you know, nobody from the Māori Party would say this, but, you know, I don't claim to have any particular demographic insights into most of the Māori electorates, but, you know, when you talk to the sort of, you know, the flax roots, iwi kind of marae based, the one thing that they don't like tends to be arrogance. And I think that's why Tāmati Coffee was more at risk than the rest of his Labour cohort. He got off on the wrong foot in 2017 by basically giving Te Rūroa Flavel, you know, who was deposed but still had a lot of respect in that community, kind of giving him a kick on the, in the pants on his way out, and hasn't really done much sort of on the ground. I understand that Labour was basically sending in reinforcements in the later stages to try and make up from Coffey's lack of sort of ground game and lack of door knocking and lack of actually asking people for their vote again.
I think part of it there too is I think Tamati's focused on some fairly niche kaupapa that don't necessarily have an immediate impact on the people of Wairiki, and it is quite an old school traditional seat, you know, home to iwi like Tūhoe, Te Aroa, those ones on the coast capturing part of the whānau Apanui who are kind of, you know, quite old school iwi with, you know, strong reel, those sorts of things. And Tamati doesn't necessarily reflect those values and skills, whereas Rāwiri has all of them. You know, he is your tūturu, kapa haka, uncle, he's got a massive profile, he's well loved. Most importantly, he wears a cowboy hat, and that alone captures about two-thirds of the vote in any Māori electorate. So, yeah, very interesting result. I'm dying with anticipation to see if Deb Ngāti Wāpaka can get up. It's only about 0.2% that she needs. To be honest, I don't know the hard numbers, but what I do remember is that in 2014, when Te Uruoa came back in Wairiki, Marama, you know, had missed out in Ikaroa Rāwhiti, but she was on a knife's edge, and I believe that year the Māori Party vote got up to about 1.2%, and it was enough to tip her in. I really hope that Deb gets in, not just because I think she's an exceptional candidate, but with my ngākau Māori, taking off my political commentating and my journalism hat, I hope that she's in, because I think, you know, Parliament is a very lonely place for Māori at any given time, even if you're in a big party. You know, the tikanga and the kawa of Parliament is very foreign to Māori, so I think for Rāwiri to have he hoa mahi, he hoa haere, I think will be very important to him as an individual and to, you know, any Māori political movement. So I think Parliament will be a richer, more exciting place for having both her and him in it. And the great thing too is that Tamati is back. Tamati isn't lost. And no, it's great to.
Well, that was the tactical pitch, right?
That's right. And I do wonder if, I think we talked about this last week, it's boring, but, you know, did the Labour MPs do the right thing coming off the list this time?
And importantly for the Māori Party, which has been through a few leaders and sort of had a range of different approaches, kaupapa, no, that's probably not right, but, you know, like
there's definitely a change in kaupapa. They've ruled out working with National, so I think that's a fair analysis.
So do they then, if you were, will Waititi now look to be in a governing arrangement? Like if Jacinda Ardern does, as of today, tomorrow, decide to try and bring as many people into the tent as possible?
Well, how incredibly enticing would that be? I don't know if Labour will, and to be honest, I don't think it would be in the Māori Party's best interest to do that. I think Tau Henare is exactly right when he says there's a tendency to undervalue the potency of the crossbenchers and just how much you can achieve there. And my God, you only need to look to David Seymour to see how true that is. So I think it would be a mistake, and for them to get into an arrangement, and I think, you know, they'll learn a lot from the crossbenchers, and most importantly, they won't get subsumed by the Labour machine. So I think I'm pretty sure JT would be advising them to work cooperatively, but to not necessarily create a formal arrangement with Labour, I would guess.
And as far as Labour is concerned, in forming a government, it will have the option pretty clearly of going alone or making some arrangement with the Greens. And it seems as though the likeliest, I don't know if you guys agree, is basically the same as it was last time, just without New Zealand First. So there are ministers outside cabinet's confidence and supply agreement, but you know, a few key portfolios, like obviously James Shaw would want to have climate change again. I think the Greens would quite like to be in cabinet and in a formal coalition, but the Greens don't need it. And
yeah, but if they don't, I reckon we'll see, like, can you imagine like James Shaw in his bedroom playing Fleetwood Mac "Go Your Own Way" real loud? That's what I want to imagine if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't imagine that they would be invited into cabinet. There's no requirement for that. You wouldn't want to. That creates extra levels of complexity for policy. Instead, you'd hive off certain policy areas to probably put them in charge of again. You know, like climate change,
conservation.
These are the obvious ones, because you know, look, I've been talking about it for 3 years, but Labor has got a talent deficit. You know, what would Labor do for a Chloe Swarbrick as a minister outside cabinet? You know, certainly they've got some people coming through who will be good ministers. You know, Kiri Tapu Allen, Deborah Russell, maybe Michael Wood. Aisha Verrill will be an excellent new candidate. Barbara Edmund. That's only just replacing the New Zealand First guys, right? You've still got Deadwood in the current cabinet. You've got a lot of inexperienced MPs coming in. And, you know, I don't think they can actually afford to lose James Shaw, Jan Logie, Julianne Genta. And I don't think they can really afford not to give Chloe Swarbrick something.
Oh, I'm hoping that Marama Davidson gets something. Interesting, like Oranga Tamariki.
We were talking about Oranga Tamariki after the last podcast, and that would be really good to see.
It's been in the last term, Tracy Martin from New Zealand First.
Yeah,
so and there would be a vacancy there.
And look, Oranga Tamariki is an absolute minefield for any
minister.
It's
a minister. Hiding to nothing.
So if you're Labour, why wouldn't you want to put another party's minister in charge of it? It's certainly in line with, you know, where Marama Davidson would think that she could make the greatest difference.
I think in terms of implementing, is it 7AA? You know, like Marama would have equipped to help achieve that.
I mean, obviously the prize portfolio as far as the Greens are concerned in social areas would be social development, but that's just not one that is likely to
A Labour Party is not going to give away social development. Yeah. And of course, statistics.
All right, look, we're fading. We're fading. We've had enough.
It's over.
I'm retiring from commentary. Have we done? Let's just wait.
We haven't done Winston. We haven't done Winston.
Sad to see the end of. I hold Ron Mark in high regard. He's been an incredible advocate for the Nepata brothers. I think he's been a very effective Minister of Defence, and his whole kaupapa of wanting to prepare our defence forces for climate change and all that goes along with that. So I'm, you know, really sad to see him leave Parliament. Shane Jones, I mean, as a journalist, you love him. He delivers in spades. You know, he's a real character. You know, of course, Winston and Jenny Marcroft, who's been a great voice for Māori broadcasting. So just want to mihi to them for their contribution. And
I'm going to break with Annabelle's sentiment and be a bit churlish. I talk with press gallery journalists all the time, and they say, oh, wouldn't it be so boring without Winston? I was working in government in 2008 to 2011 when there was no New Zealand First, the last time they were dumped out of Parliament after being embroiled in an SFO scandal. And it was great. It was fantastic in Parliament without Winston Peters and New Zealand First. We didn't have any of the sort of rancour of the previous two terms on race issues, on treaty issues. There was far less division. You know, John Key and the Māori Party and Chris Finlayson have got a lot, you know, obviously contributed to that, a huge deal. But I think a key part was the fact that New Zealand First
weren't there causing problems. This is a good thing for New Zealand. It's a good thing for Parliament. It's a good thing for the public discourse.
Kia ora.
Great points. Also, it was real sweet and poignant and sad to see Winston with his dog Beau on the last day of the campaign.
Shout out to the bad boys of Brexit.
Oh, yeah, the bad boys of Brexit.
You guys did such a great job.
Fucking killed it. Absolutely killed it.
Every dime.
Amazing. We'd like to get you to do some work on this podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe do some TikToks.
Mm.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, members. Thanks, Flick Electric. Thanks, Jane. Thanks, listeners, for your forbearance at our time of need.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.